So good morning, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for coming this morning. Is there anybody who is new today, first time? Oh, okay. So usually on Sundays, there's a Dharma talk. Dharma refers to the name sort of given to the whole body of Buddhist teachings. There are a lot of them, having been around for 2,600 years. But they're always presented in a way that is relevant to our lives, meaningful to our lives, and applicable to our lives. But before I begin the talk this morning, I wanted to take an opportunity to see if there are any questions. And these can be questions of people who are new, people who are semi-new, people who are old and been around. Because again, each of us has our life. You know, the teachings and the practices are sort of, in some ways, generic, but their application to the personality and the situation is unique, and so it is often. You know, that's where the sort of the pedal hits the metal or something like that. You know, a real life practice. And so if there are any questions about things you've been reading or things you've been hearing, about how to apply them in your own life that's not clear, or just reading about various teachings, you're not quite sure what they mean, or anything that you've seen here today or this morning or other times, it's not clear. Please, there's not often we get an opportunity to come together and to talk about these things. So if there's anything that is not clear, please feel free to ask a question. And don't be shy. We all have questions. We're not. Yes. Yeah. So you're talking about personal suffering. So the question is, during great times of suffering, how does one get through that, and how does that relate to the practice of awareness of breathing? Is that sort of your question? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why we're here, right? That's why Buddhism has existed for 2,600 years. because if there's suffering, if there wasn't any suffering, if everything was great, all the time, there'd be no reason for us to come together like this at all, would there? At least, I mean, again, it wasn't only the Buddha's discovery, but that certainly is where he began, with the acknowledgement that even though life has many good things, there are many things in life that give happiness and joy and pleasure, etc., etc., everything seemed also to be conditioned by the opposite. And it is because of the suffering that goes on in life within individuals, within their own minds, in terms of relationships, etc. It is because of suffering, right, that the Buddha began his own search for understanding, right? The first noble truth of Buddhism is dukkha. There is this fundamental reality to suffering, dissatisfaction, unhappiness, pain of body and mind that seems to be just present in this world. And that robs life, right? Of well-being and happiness and all the capacities that we know that human beings have of love, of kindness, of goodness, altruist activity, good thoughts, whatever you want to call it, et cetera, that somehow there's something that seems to rob us, even to the best of our intentions, to rob us of that capacity to live in a place of goodness. And that is suffering, right? Many kinds of suffering. And I won't go into it. That's a whole Dharma talk unto itself. So understanding suffering, right? understanding the causes of suffering is the kind of way in, okay? the capacity to acknowledge what suffering is in our own life when it is present in the lives of others, to understand that suffering arises because of causes and conditions, and to understand what those causes and conditions are is very important, because otherwise we can get into a sense of suffering always has to be in life, or there's nothing one can do about it other than suffer. So it is important to understand that the Buddha didn't just stop at acknowledging suffering in the world, but he looked into what's causing it. And I think that's important for each of us as we experience suffering, unhappiness, dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness, alienation, stress, on and on and on, whatever you want to call it. What is causing that to arise within me? And that is a very interesting quest, because it, when you understand the causes of, you really understand the ending of, right? Because if the causes are removed, then the effect will be removed. Because every cause has an effect, and every effect has a cause. Quite simply, this is because of that, and that is because of this. And when we understand that we don't live in a random, out of control world, but a world that is operating according to these principles of cause and effect, we see that our suffering and the suffering of those around us is also unfolding within that context. So understanding, right? And when we understand in Buddhism, there is acceptance. Again, another very common word that everybody talks about. But when I talk about acceptance, it's not an acceptance that is like a resignation or I get it or yeah, this is just the way it is. And it means acceptance means I understand clearly why things are the way they are, why I am the way I am, why I'm experiencing what I am, why other people are experiencing, why this is going on, and this goes all the way up. This formula of understanding the causes of suffering is not just for us as individuals, it's also in the world. How do I understand the world? Why do people do what they do? Why do things unfold the way they unfold? Why is there violence? Why is there suffering? Why is there indifference? Why, you know, etc. Why is that? Well, there has to be a cause. Right? And we have to clearly see that there are all kinds of causes in this world, and they create all kinds of effects. That is understanding. And Buddhism is a teaching that is a wisdom teaching. It puts great stock on understanding how things are, understanding the nature of things. Right? So we want to understand our suffering and its causes. Not so we can write a book about it, but because we can see what changes can be made in my life, in my way of thinking, in the way I'm relating, that may create a different outcome. Now, what does that have to do with meditation and mindfulness? Again, it relates directly. This is why meditation, mindfulness, grounding, clarity of mind are so essential, because if they are not present, we will not see clearly and we will not understand causation. Because we spend our lives lost in our dramas, lost in our self-created dramas, the dramas that our thoughts, our minds, endlessly fabricate. And so we do not see clearly. We cannot see ourselves clearly. We cannot see others clearly. And we certainly cannot see the world clearly. There has to be a way to clarify, you know, our minds. If my glasses are dirty, and they are often dirty, I will not see clearly. If my glasses are very dirty, I will not see clearly at all. If my glasses are covered over, I will not see anything at all, even though I'm wearing glasses. Right? So even though I have a mind that has the capacity of seeing and understanding and etc., if I am not clear, that gift of mind will never be available to me. So, we have to learn how to stop. We have to let, as Thich Nhat Hanh, the sediment fall to the ground, the sediment in the water to settle, the mud to settle. So the water becomes clear so we can look into the water and see what's there. As long as things are stirred up, we cannot see clearly, right? As long as our thoughts are racing and our emotions are just washing through us, that's all we will experience. We will not see things as they are. So the practice of meditation, the practice of mindfulness, gives us that capacity, right, of stopping, of seeing clearly, so we can look at what's going on within us. And we can name it appropriately. And we can see the causes. And we can see beyond ourself. Most of the times when we are in suffering or difficulty, we are lost in our self story. We do not see the so-called 360 view. We only see it from our vantage point. We don't see it from his vantage point and her vantage point and their vantage point. You know, when we have that capacity to look at the situation from all these different viewpoints, then we have the capacity of acting wisely and for the benefit of all, not just simply for myself. But you know, when we are in strong places of emotion, anger, resentment, fear, hurt, sadness, we only act from ourselves. And when we act from ourselves, that is not the solution to whatever is going on. So the practice of mindfulness, the practice of meditation, these are not quote-unquote, you know, they're often seen as spiritual practices. Right? But that's not true. In Buddhism, there's no distinction between the material and the spiritual. It's the same. Right. Meditation, mindfulness, insight, concentration, these are practices that one needs in life. If we are, one, to be happy ourselves, and to experience the capacity for well-being. Our being is well. That is in each of us. But also, if we're going to act in some kind of altruistic, intentional, positive, intelligent, wise way in the world, right? So we're not continually muddying up the water of the world. We have to. These practices are essential. Because the problem in the world is the problem of people's minds. Anger, violence, selfishness, greed, I mean, violence, these all come from the mind. Right? They don't come out of the ether. They don't come from our bodies. They don't come from our livers. Right? They don't come from our lungs. They don't come from our elbows. They come from our minds. And so it is the mind that has to be understood, the mind that has to be transformed, the mind that has to be healed, the mind that has to be cultivated so its innate capacities for goodness and understanding and wisdom just naturally flow out. How do you do that? Well, that's what's called meditation. But, you know, in our culture, we like to, you know, we're so technological. Well, so all of a sudden we start doing this thing called meditation. You know, I'm doing this practice called meditation. I'm doing this practice called mindfulness. But that's not what this is about. It's about our life, our minds, and how then as our life, as fundamentally coming from our minds, manifests in speech and the actions of our body, you know, now there is a congruence for truly creating good in the world, in our relationships, and now we can truly participate in the healing and the transformation of the world, rather than the continuation of suffering. And if we look at our politics, and if we look at our what's going on nationally, internationally, we see what? It's just endlessly perpetuating. Ignorance, violence, intolerance, hatred. You know. And the more we think we're doing things to stop it, the more what happens? It just continues. It even gets worse. Because nobody ever does what we just talked about today, which is what? Stop. Just stop. And let the sediment settle. And then let us together look deeply into life, into the situations, so we can bring understanding, so we can bring compassion to the events of our life and the events of the world, rather than more anger and hurt and intolerance. You know, anyhow. Forgive my long-windedness. Was that helpful at all? I mean, if it wasn't, you can tell me. I'm not. I mean, did that relate to what you were asking? Again, there is in the practice of mindfulness learning how to calm. Right? So we have these strong emotions, right? And like you say, they are moving through us, and they, left to their own, they will sweep us away. So there has to be a way that we learn to calm them, right? And so in your mindfulness practice, when you come back to your breath, and you breathe in and out, you are in a certain way disengaging from the storm. Okay. When outside it is stormy, you know, like it's been a couple of days, windy and stormy and rainy, right? To be outside in that can be difficult. But to be inside in a room like this, the storm, we didn't stop the storm, did we? But we have some shelter. Unfortunately, most of us have not created that shelter within ourselves that we can come back to, that we can step back from. This endless unfolding of the conditioning way our thoughts and feelings react to situations. They have a life of their own, don't they? Even our best intentions to act differently and be differently pale in the power of our conditioning when it is activated. It is often very embarrassing and humiliating how quickly one gets swept away by one's reactive, conditioned way of responding to things. So learning to do it differently, it takes time. But we have to begin by cultivating this place within us that we know that has this stability that we can retreat into, that therefore not to escape from. This is practice meditation, not escape, but so that we can deal intelligently and wisely, compassionately with what's arising, right? For example, that you're suffering, right? And your suffering needs a part of you to take care of it. If there's no part of you to take care of it, your suffering will just continue until it eventually just wears itself out, which of course it does, until we start it again. So again, this takes time, but we have to begin somewhere. A lot of times, you know, because when we're in an afflictive mind state of hurt or disappointment, of fear, of anger, resentment, et cetera, right? It's a story that we keep feeding, repeating over and over again. So the intensity just continues. We have to get out of our story. Our story is very self-contained. It's like we're in a cocoon, a bubble of our own delusive creation, but it seems awfully real. Right? This is why also you know, as in conjunction with our meditative practice, we need to do some studying. We need to change the way we are looking at things, including ourselves, our mind, our emotions, so we understand, you know, so you can label, you know. Because when we're lost in the story and the situation and the me versus them, and they did this to me, and blah, 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 or they didn't do it, you know, we think it's real, don't we? And we don't see it as suffering. Just to say to yourself, this mind state I'm in, these emotions I'm feeling, this is suffering. I am suffering. There is suffering present in me. Just to say that is a good beginning. And to understand that this suffering is arising nowhere else but where? In my own body and mind. He didn't do it to me, she didn't do it to me, situation didn't do it to me. That's all things that happen. But the suffering, the emotional pain, is going on only in one place. Where? My own mind. How did it get in my mind? Somebody left the door wide open. And it wasn't him or her. It's my door. That's why in the teaching it says, place mindfulness at the gate of your mind. Right? Place mindfulness at the gate of your mind. You've heard me talk. You know, there's got to be a gatekeeper. You know, gated community. There's got to be somebody checking who's coming in, right? To have a gate and have it always up and have nobody checking, it's not going to protect anybody. And we need protection. Our minds need protection until we've transformed it enough. Our mind needs protection from what? From our thoughts, from our perceptions, from our projections, right? And if there's nobody at home, if there's nobody at the gate to go, you know, suffering, delusion, anger, fear is trying to get in. If there's nobody there to name it, right? And we just let it all in. Which many of us are. That's why many of our minds are like garbage pits. We just let anything in, right? And then we wonder, you know, like, where did these thoughts come from, you know? Where did these feelings come from? God, where, you know, we when you pay attention to what's arising in your mind, well, it's, you know, it's because we just let it in. There's nobody at the gate. There's nobody saying, stop thinking about that. God, you're going to go over that one again. You know, what's going to be the result of this? If you keep thinking this, if you say this, I mean, if there's nobody at the gate, it'll just continue endlessly. Right? So it is said in the teachings, place mindfulness at the gate of your mind. Mindfulness identifies what's arising. It is present to what is arising. Same way when my eyes are open and I am mindful, I see what is in front of me. So I can act wisely and intelligently with what I see. But if I do not have that same thing going on in my mind, right? If I was blind, what would happen? I would just bump into things. I would stumble over things. I'd be endlessly hurting myself. But this is the way we are with our minds. We are, in a certain way, blind. We don't see what's going on. And therefore, we just stumble about in this life. Right? Sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're sad. Sometimes we're loving, sometimes we're hateful. You know what I mean? Sometimes we're relaxed, sometimes we're stressed out. You know, and we just kind of bump around in life. So the reason we find a spiritual path, quote unquote, or the reason we practice meditation, study the teachings, do all the things we do, is to transform this. Have we done it? Okay. Okay. Other questions? Please don't be shy. Yes.
We had an excellent workshop yesterday on gratitude. Uh-huh. Your views on how important gratitude is?
What is my stand on gratitude? Thich Nhat Hanh, many decades ago, I heard him say, if we are not grateful, we suffer. It's quite strong. If we are not grateful, we suffer. So I was very struck by that. You know, we either live in this world, what's in it for me? That's called egocentric living. What's in it for me? What have you done for me today? Right? What haven't you done for me today? As long as we're looking at life like that, we will suffer, won't we? Gratitude is what? Gratitude is a deep understanding that in the deepest sense, we are owed nothing. And so everything that arises, the things we see, the things we hear, the things we smell, the things we taste, the things we touch, and all our experiences are to be gratefully accepted. The mind of gratitude is the mind that is open. The mind of ingratitude is a mind that is closed, that has a very narrow opening. In this practice of the Mahayana, we are taught to be grateful to everyone and to be grateful to every situation, especially difficult situations and people give us a hard time. I talk about a practice of gratitude, right? I mean, it's one thing to notice all the good things in our life, to be grateful we have a body, to be grateful we have eyes, to be grateful we have ears, to be grateful that we can hear sounds, there's so many wonderful things to be grateful for, food, or, that we have food. Many people don't have food, that I have a healthy body. Many people don't have a healthy body. I mean, so there's many, many, for many people, that's their practice of gratitude, which is a good one, at least like beginning to acknowledge that somehow we are not the creators of the world in the center of the universe, that we are endlessly receiving, right? You know, we drive here on roads that other people build and other people maintain. We drive in cars that other people build and other people maintain. We come to buildings that other people have created for us and they clean and they set up for us. We eat the food that everybody, other people pick and ship and, We are the endless recipients of other people's life, animals, plants, So that's a good beginning. just to feel that interconnection. The life of ingratitude is a life of self. It's a life of aloneness. It doesn't see all the endless benefits that we are receiving. Now, having said that, that's a very transformative practice. But we have to take it the next step. Those situations where we suffer, where we believe somebody has caused us suffering, how do we be grateful to that? To those painful times, hurtful times, disappointing times, situations where things are not going our way. Can we be open and grateful to those? That's the test. In the Bodhisattva way, the reason it is said to be grateful to everyone, especially one's enemies, especially the ones who give you a hard time, especially difficult situations, because they challenge us. They challenge what? Our capacity to love, our capacity to be open to others, our capacity to experience life as it is, which is often goes our way, doesn't go our way. They like us, they don't like us. We win, we lose. They say kind things to us, they say unkind things to us. We're praised, we're blamed, that's just the way it is, isn't it? And how can you live in that world accepting things as they are, not being tossed about by these comings and goings of life, always changing? You cultivate that openness and you realize that in my non-acceptance of a situation or a person, I am doing that because I am not willing to bring understanding and compassion to that situation. When you bring understanding and compassion to that situation, it is transformed. So it is because of that we are grateful for the people who give us a hard time. Not that, we go out of our way to cultivate that. This is deeper than that. Right? As it is said, when things are going well in the world, everybody looks like a great practitioner. Right? It's a piece of cake. Everything's going my way. People are treating me great. Life is good. I'm healthy. I'm happy. Right? You don't get any points for that. You don't get any points for that. That's easy. But it's when things aren't going our way, when people aren't treating us the way we want, That's the test, right? And so we are grateful for the tests in life, because they show us, they may show us how far we've come, but they also show us where we're still stuck, where we're still holding on. And so we're grateful to that, because we want to be free. You know, in Buddhism, we say things like, what? What's my aspiration? I want to be a Buddha. Anybody ever heard that? Yeah, it's really, again, in other religions, you know, you're charged with heresy for saying things like that, right? What's my aspiration? Well, I would like to be like God, or at least like Jesus, you know. But in Buddhism, people talk this way. Yeah. What's your aspiration? I want to be a Buddha. I want to be a Bodhisattva. And people say, how wonderful. You can become that. Because every seed that is watered comes to fruition. If you plant the seed of that aspiration in your mind and you cultivate that, it will come into being. It will eventually come into being. So we want to be free. We want to be free of our suffering. We want to be free of our delusions. We want to be free of our constrictions. We want to be free of our stuff. We want to be free of our issues. Right? We'd like to be free, happy and at ease. So anything that helps us get there, we are grateful for. Shantideva says, a great 8th century Indian Buddhist teacher said, he said, on your altar, you know, you should have the picture of the Buddha and pictures of all your enemies on your altar. You know, they're both helping you. Who would ever think that, right? You know, on one hand, you have these pictures or these images of people that are symbolic of the deepest aspiration, and then half the altar is, you know, every jerk you've ever met. And you bow to them equally. That's a deep practice. Other questions? Yes. Yeah, again, you know, everything is in context, right? So our context is we're on a path of transformation and healing. That's our context. So that is a process. You know, people talk about walking a spiritual path, right? Well, spiritual path doesn't mean like it's like a 3x3 piece of sidewalk, right? Like I'm always in the same place. A path is a, you know, it's something you walk on, right? It's a process. A path takes you from here to there. So in Buddhism, we might say the path is from the world of suffering, the world of delusion, the world of dissatisfaction, et cetera, to this place of Buddhahood, right? Enlightenment. That is the path. So you're walking a path. So what we're talking about is how you're dealing with things as they arise. But if you're saying, you know, what is informing your movement is this, you know, desire to be awake, to be free, to be experiencing a full range of positive emotions. Right? So there's a process that you're involved in, right, which will keep you from just, you know, being resigned or apathetic. We have to understand that if we talk about the Buddhist path, we are talking about a path of words where we people, you know, like enlightenment or awakening or freedom. We have to understand that this is what it's about. Now, again, whether each of us as individuals, that is our path or goal, you know, that's reachable. You know, you can get on Highway 95, right, and take it from Interstate 95. You can take it from Miami to West Palm, right? You can get off of West Palm. Is it 95? 95. Or you can take it where? Up to Jacksonville. How far north does it go? All the way up the coast to Maine? All right, so there you go. That's what I was saying. So therefore, you know, you can take it all the way to Maine. Right? So, you know, I think the issue for each of us, wherever we come on the path, is, you know, what's my destination? And that can change, right? I mean, you may start out in Miami and your destination is Jacksonville. And after you spend a little time in Jacksonville, you realize there may be more up the road. or else you could just, you know, get on 95 in Miami and your aspiration is to go all the way to Maine. That is hard, I think, for Americans or Westerners. That is hard because it seems as if since we do not come out of a culture where kind of enlightenment, awakening are part of the conversation, both in the secular or religious world, and we are primarily, for many of us, our conversation is more psychologically based, that we often really see that, you know, the end game of this is like being less stressed, coping better, you know, things like that. The idea of being free of having a mind that is free of all neuroses, or free of all conflict, free of all negative emotions, that is only filled with a kind of positive states. Many of us can't believe, you know, that sounds too far-fetched, but that's not, I mean, that's what this is about, to be honest. It, you know, Buddhist teachings, because it is a teaching of the mind and because it is a science and technology that has been experimented with for 2,600 years, it's experimented with the mind. Whose mind? This, you know, a mind just like us. It might have been an Indian mind, it might have been a Tibetan mind, it might have been a Cambodian mind, it might have been a Chinese mind, a Japanese mind. You know, those are the outer forms, but it was always the human mind. And in that sense, the experimentation of these past 2,600 years is relevant to us. And the end result of that experimentation is, yeah, we are capable of so much more than we think. Human happiness is much more than we think. The capacity to live an altruistic life on a consistent basis is not just the purview of saints. We all have that capacity. There is no difference between us and the Buddha other than our minds. And from our minds come the actions of our words and the actions of our body. When the mind is transformed and healed, the actions of our body and speech will be different. That is given. Why? Because of cause and effect. Change the causes, you change the effects. That's kind of like science. Except it's a science of the mind. And we need to understand that these wonderful teachings that have come to us in these last several decades and the practices are very different. We have to be careful that we don't water them down so we just understand them in terms of our own relative view. But that we understand that these are teachings that are giving us, are promising much more than coping better with life. I mean, again, I'm not saying there's, you know, nothing, you know, that there's anything wrong with coping better. It's, I mean, coping better is better than coping worse. I would certainly grant that to us. But there's more in this than that. Other questions, even simple ones? Yes. What? I'm
sorry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How is that affecting
our ability to get to this place? Let me just repeat the question. So the question is, mind, brain, but basically, our current environment is very toxic, not only in terms of pesticides and herbicides and pollutions of all that, but even as dangerous is the words, the images that are so flooding our experience in the media. It wasn't that long ago that people, the big issue was the effect of TV on children or on our minds. I mean, that was only a couple of decades ago. You know, TV was the big one. And now it's like, nobody even worries about TV anymore because there are all these other medias that are so so pervasive. That is why, I would say, mindfulness and meditation is essential if you want to maintain a sanity in this life. Because these are, at the end of the day, simply things that are arising to our awareness. Whatever the images, whatever the sound, whatever the words, whatever the messages that are streaming through Fox News and even through the internet and streaming through the political discussion and streaming through our iPhones and iPads and texting and Twittering and, at the end of the day, all these things are just blips of information that are arising to the mind and through the senses. And if there is no grasping at, no engagement with, they float in and they float out. The mind that is cultivated, the mind of equanimity that is cultivated by Buddhist meditators, is a mind that does not grasp at phenomena. That is why you can be exposed to all kinds of toxic mind stuff and in no way be affected. If you have that kind of mind that doesn't grasp, that doesn't engage with this toxicity, right? In the same way, if you want to eat, organic, healthy food, right? You go to Publix, and what do? You pass by 95% of what's offered. It doesn't affect you that it's all being offered, does it? No, you just walk by it, it's no big deal. And you go to where there's nourishment. You go to the foods you want. In the same way, if one learns, if one understands that many of the things that we are consuming with our minds, and we have to see that in the same way our mouth consumes foods and our eyes consume sights and our ears consume sounds, our minds are endlessly consuming thoughts, perceptions, feelings, images. And we have to know that if we do not deal with, if there's no mindfulness gate, if there's nobody that can see toxic from non-toxic, healthy from non-healthy, influences that are ennobling of me and influences that aren't, again, if we're just, garbage in, garbage out, it'll affect us. Again, I think meditation and mindfulness is the biggest antidote to all that, because you have the capacity of seeing what's going on, right? Let it be. In Buddhism, they talk about this is 2,600 years, you know, the better way to catch a snake. You know, when you see that poisonous snake, don't pick it up. Right? Don't pick it up. Just let it be. It'll unwind itself. It'll go away. Right? You don't have to be afraid. But don't pick it up. If you pick it up, what's going to happen? You're going to get bit. The toxin will enter you. As long as we are picking up these messages and taking them in and digesting them in a good or bad way, right? There are many people who take them in because they like it, and many people who take it in because they don't like it and they just ruminate how much they don't like it. The end result is the same. It's just on the opposite side of things. So, I think things are different. I think a couple of centuries ago, culture, none of that was very different. You know, this whole world of messages, you know, constantly, people don't have to talk to each other anymore, do they? They can just text. That's all very quickly that's happened. Right? So I think we need to bring our mindfulness and look deeply into this. And again, I think these practices are essential to maintain a real sanity in this world, and intelligence. Anything else we haven't covered? Yes.
I feel like I'm hearing some common theme to some of the questions that have been asked about the relationship between our practice and the wider world.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you've told us that we need to set mindfulness at the gate of our minds,
mm-hmm.
and learn not to pick up the poisonous snakes that we come across.
Mm-hmm.
But does this mean that we disengage from the wider world and that we become indifferent?
Mm-hmm. You know I would never say that. Are you leading me on here already? So we have somebody very clever over here who's, I think he wants me to comment on what is our relationship to the wider world in terms of this toxic world. See it in mindfulness, let it arise and disappear, and cultivate our own equanimity and not be disturbed by it? I would say yes and no. The yes part is for the sake of the world, for the sake of this broken world, we have to be whole. For the sake of this world lost in their fears and their angers and their greeds and their needs and their selfishness, we have to cultivate the opposite. That is essential. And unfortunately, that takes time. I was meeting with a group before meditation this morning. You know, unfortunately, this takes time. Healing and transformation is not something you can do in a month, or in a week, or go to a workshop. It takes time. But it will occur. So that as we act in the world, we act from a place of clarity, from a place of equanimity, from a place of understanding. So our activities in the world, and again, please remember, we use these concepts like the world. You know, we are the world. I mean, each of us is the world, right? It's not like I'm here and the world's out there, right? I mean, we're all part of the world, right? Every tree in the forest is the forest, right? I mean, so our own transformation, our own giving up our addiction to self-centeredness, to anger, to hatred, to intolerance, our own willingness to cultivate understanding, equanimity, love, acceptance. This is transforming the world, because we are the world. We have to understand that. Now, at the same time, you know, we're not just an island, right? So we want to act. We want to act in the arenas we can act. We can act in the arenas of our families. We can act within the arenas of our communities. We can act within the arenas. So is that, I mean, so yes. Yeah. So it's not about indifference. We are in this, you know, we are long distance runners. And we're in this for the transformation and the enlightenment of the world. Right? And that's what this is about.